Welcome to another episode of TV Babble, where we'll be dissecting, discussing, and yes, babbling about all things TV. I'm Jim Halterman, West Coast Bureau Chief of TV Guide Magazine, and this week we've just wrapped up the summer press tour of the Television Critics Association in Los Angeles. So I sat down with my colleagues, senior critic Matt Rausch and senior writer Damian Holbrook, to talk about all the highlights of the TCAs and what shows we're excited for you to check out this fall. But first up, the new series You is coming on September 9th on Lifetime. The drama follows a young man played by Gossip Girl alum Penn Badgley, who develops an obsession with Elizabeth Lail, and let's just say things get a little creepy, but very interesting. The series comes from producer Sarah Gamble, who you know from shows like The Magicians and Supernatural, and Greg Berlanti, who produces DC superhero shows on the CW, among many other shows. It also stars Pretty Little Liars alum Shay Mitchell, so keep an eye out for her. Damian sat down with Gamble at the TCAs to break down the series and let us know how closely it follows the Carolyn Kempness novel of the same name. Let's start babbling.
Hey everyone, I'm Damian Holbrook. I'm sitting here with Sarah Gamble, executive producer for You on Hello. Lifetime, as well as The Magicians. As we all know, we love that show. But now we're going to talk about You.
Let's talk about You.
Yes. All right. So I've seen the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who don't know what it is, just talk about this.
It's just a warm little love story.
It's a love story for the current age.
For the current age, yeah. Yes. It is the story of Joe Goldberg, played by Penn Badgley, mm-hmm. who is a thoughtful, quiet, intelligent, bookish guy, works at a bookstore. Young woman walks in one day. Her name is Guinevere Beck. She's mm-hmm. played by Elizabeth Lail. He's intrigued. He does what you or I might do. Certainly what I would do is Google her.
Yes.
In fact, I think you might be crazy not to Google a person. And then he looks into her social media a little more. Mm-hmm. Then he walks by her yoga studio. Yeah. And then, cut to he's in her apartment. I mean, he starts to cross these lines. He does that not because he's some crazy unhinged serial killer or something, but mm-hmm. because he really believes in love and he wants to get it right.
So, having read the book, which is based on Carolyn Kempness's novel, I had forgotten how much we're in his head.
Yeah.
And there are certain things that he does that I think every person does.
Yes.
He will Google stalk them, check their Facebook, see their Instagram. I do that all the time. It's his thought process and his mm-hmm. assessments of her, what he assumes are her motivations.
Yes.
That are so terrifying.
Yes.
Because when you hear somebody say your account is set to public, you want to be looked at, that's where it goes
a little awry.
And your friends aren't good because he's overhearing things or mm-hmm. he's checking comments. I was watching it thinking, oh God, I know this guy.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard men in my life talk about women mm-hmm. in that very toxic masculinity of they do it because of this. They try to think for women.
Right, they ascribe motivation.
Right, to justify their behavior.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I found so compelling and kind of endearing about him, frankly, in the novel mm-hmm. was that he was just being so honest
right.
through his thoughts. And a lot of my thoughts are dark and ugly. I mean, I think a lot of all of ours are, right? I mean, I have an unvarnished opinion and then I varnish it and say it out loud, right? And I think we knew it was our job. We had to capture that. So we mm-hmm. had to let him say things that were going to be a little rough to hear at times. That's part of we have to establish that credibility. And then, yes, one of the mm-hmm. things that was most interesting to me making this show was to start by seeing Beck from his point of view.
Right.
You start by hearing all of the motivations that he ascribes to her.
Yes.
And then over time, you'll see this in a coming episode, we get more and more closely into her point of view as well.
Okay,
and
I was wondering, when will we start to see what she thinks of this guy? Because the way he's a very unreliable narrator.
Yes, he is.
In that, because at first I was like, wow, she really is clearly into him.
Mm-hmm.
Because, or is she just charming? Is she just a nice person?
Yeah.
Because that's where our heads will go. It's I know people who think that if the barista at Starbucks is friendly to them when giving back their change,
mm-hmm.
that girl's into me.
Yes.
And she could just be a very nice person doing her job well.
It's one of the catch-22s of being a young woman, mm-hmm. I think, in our culture. And we really tried to capture that in the first episode, partly by having her have to interact in a way that could be perceived as lightly flirty with her professor.
Right.
When I was Beck's age, I mean, I get to be a little bitchier now. I'm a little older.
Right.
I get to be the boss. I can be I was going to use a word that I'm not sure you can use in your podcast, but so we'll go with bitchy. But sir, I remember so clearly this feeling that I had to stay really nice and polite and warm,
right.
you know, to show that I had good manners, mm-hmm. show that, and those wires are completely crossed for our entire culture yeah. at this point.
Well, this is that, like, if you're not that way, somebody's going to say to you, oh, you should smile more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, by the way, that's a mild version of that story. I've right. heard versions of that story where it gets physical, where Jeez. Like you can, you know, you insult the right, like the, there's truth to yeah. those kind yeah. of apocryphal kind of stories we tell about how like men are afraid they'll get laughed at and women are afraid they'll be murdered.
Right, right, right? Yeah, right. Like our egos versus their lives.
Yeah. yeah. And so, I mean, I would in, certainly, in, and this isn't answering a question anymore, now I'm just riffing, but, you know, in writing Beck, it was important to us to just be also honest about her and about the fact that like right. nobody has it all figured out in their early 20s.
Oh, right.
And this isn't any kind of cautionary tale because she is doing her best and she's a smart young woman mm. in New York making all the mistakes we should all be allowed to make.
Yes.
Without having someone like Joe come and try to quote unquote clean up our mess.
Yeah. And he comes in like a cancer. Like by the end of the first episode, he has infiltrated her life without her even knowing it.
On the other hand... Counterpoint.
Yeah.
When I read the book, I was like, God, there is a dark... I mean, I almost didn't want to admit it to myself, but there's this sort of really dark wish fulfillment in what okay. he's doing because the people around her are sort of holding her back in a way. Oh. They're not great.
Well, that's the other... I want to talk about casting, but yeah. Shay Mitchell from Pretty Little Liars has nailed
yeah.
that bitchy underminer friend.
Yes.
The one who builds you up to you mm-hmm. and then is secretly... so devoted to keeping you from ever moving forward.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has to be a lot. It has to be, her character's name is Peach, and it really does yeah. have to be about Peach. And
yes.
as the season goes on, you really get to know the lengths that Peach will go to because she is sort of the, really a strong adversary for Joe. She,
yeah.
she would like, she's very possessive of her friends. She's mm-hmm. especially possessive of Beck. And so they kind of, they go mano a mano a bit.
And for her, it's just a control thing.
It isn't, I mean, to begin with, she seems like that, Queen
okay,
Bee, and
right.
it's just sort of like, all is well if everyone knows that I really rule
right,
this
right.
little group of girls. Yeah. But as time goes on, it was important to us to also get deeper with her as well,
okay.
and I'm really excited for people to see Shay's work in episodes 5 and 6, especially, Yay. Which is when you, like, get to know the real Peach.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about casting, because Beck is vital
yeah.
at casting her, because when we've talked before, she has to have something about her that makes her immediately captivating to Joe.
Yeah.
And I feel like Elizabeth Lail, the actress you've cast, has that in spades.
Yeah.
Like, I understand why Joe would be fascinated with her. I understand why Peach would be fascinated mm-hmm. with her. I understand why her professor would be fascinated with her. She's smart. She's kind of an open book.
Yeah.
And technically, and technologically, she's clearly an open book mm-hmm. because you can literally find out anything about her. But she does have this openness to her.
Yeah.
That invites you in.
Yeah. I mean, she's just full of life.
Mm.
And I think that that is just fundamentally attractive to us as people. It felt like a little bit creepy when we were casting the role.
Okay.
I was frequently in those casting sessions with David Rappaport, who's our amazing casting director, and Sarah Schechter, and
mm-hmm.
Gina Girolamo from
Alley Books.
Gina's
the best.
She's
yes.
the best. And, you know, and we would have these conversations about prospective Becks.
Mm-hmm.
And we would talk about, like, would we want to stalk them?
Oh, gosh.
So it's like, you know, any semblance
oh, wow.
of feeling removed from this material
right.
has got, like, I have to, in order to make this show,
yeah.
we have to admit that those impulses are not alien. They exist
oh.
inside. I'm not going to say they exist inside. I'm not going to say that about you or anyone else, but they exist inside
they
me.
They exist inside me.
Like,
I'm
a nosy, nosy person.
Yep.
I want to know everything about people. I became a writer because I want, you know, so I exploited that
yeah.
dark side of myself for this show, for sure.
So you found her first and then Penn Badgley came mm-hmm. on, or was Penn first?
I don't remember the exact order of events, but we found her through an audition.
Okay.
And Penn read the script and we sat down and chatted with him.
Okay.
And everything really did click into a very clear perspective when we knew that Penn was playing Joe.
Okay.
It's like you can see the whole show when you know who Joe is.
Yeah.
And that was just a fascinating, because he's so thoughtful. I mean, he's sort of the anti-Joe in life.
He's so good. It's so, and for Gossip Girl fans, it's like that weird next evolutionary step
mm-hmm.
of his character there, like who was the one who was like on top of everyone's social media, knew what everyone was doing, knew everyone's secrets. And now this guy, even though he's not as diabolical when we first meet him
mm-hmm.
as Gossip Girl could have been, this guy goes far.
This is like a crazy mirror universe.
Yes, yes. And it is, like, it's interesting to watch his character just start to make the choices that he feels he has to make to maintain this illusion and delusion that he's creating for himself.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that was really remarkable to me in working with him this season is just that the level of experience that he has, just as a TV actor in this medium, because he, you know, he had this graduate school program at a very young age, being on a show for a long time. So his approach to the material and the stuff he can do while seemingly doing so little, it's just very varsity.
And it's very varsity, you're
like,
right.
Yeah. I often was writing these action lines for him where I was sort of asking him to think about seven or eight things in succession. Because he doesn't speak a lot in the scenes. His voiceover is
the voiceover, right.
So he has, so somebody like reads the voiceover to him in rehearsal, and he just cycles through a fucking monologue, an aria, an entire act of Shakespeare, just with his face.
With his face.
No words. And he can stand there and do that. I mean, you know.
He's
always a good actor, but I mean, we got him at the right time.
Because there is, like, the juxtaposition of him, especially in some of the bookstore scenes, where, like, what's going through his head and what we're hearing doesn't reflect exactly on his face because he's, you know, he's got his real world face on.
Yeah.
Oh, and the first episode ends in a very dark, very dark moment. And you had to open the book up. How much change did you introduce to the storyline?
I mean, it's on some days it felt like we were making a zillion little changes just because the medium of TV is so different. We have, as you know, we have entirely new characters, and like Paco, the young
boy, young
lives in his and his family, and that opens up storylines that start to affect all of the other ones. So the best that I can say is that you will see stuff that you recognize, and then you'll be like, "Oh, they're going a different direction with this major."
Thing. You know, much like you've done with the Magicians.
I mean, the Magicians even more. I will say that You was a more direct adaptation in some ways because it's a more conventionally plot-driven book. And not as a surprise, Caroline has experience writing scripts as well.
Exactly.
So I think her mind thinks that way more. Magicians is like this giant epic, you know, sprawling character fantasy. Yeah. And because of that, we had to take more circuitous routes to get to the plot points, I think. Okay. But it was such fantastic training for this. And I'm very, very grateful that I've been working on The Magicians and that I have this relationship with Lev Grossman, the author of those books, because when we sat down with Caroline, I was able to really talk turkey with her about, like, here's my observation of what it was like for the author on this other show. So, like, let's talk about your expectations and let's talk about
what
you
care about. Which is so great because I'm sure the writer. And as Caroline, would you consider, like, is she going to write an episode?
She did.
She did.
She wrote episode 8.
Oh, fantastic.
People who have read the book will think of it as the Karen Minty episode.
Okay, I think I was on set for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the book, the second book, Hidden Bodies, moved to LA. And now you guys are moving to LA.
Yep.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I know that we'll lose certain things from the New York-based story. Have you already started plotting out how season 2 will...
A little bit, yeah. There are some... very substantial changes at the end. I feel obliged to say that because I just, like, want to keep people who have read the books on their toes.
Okay.
I want to both say, like, if you like the book, you like the show, but I also want to say, don't expect it to go the same
way. You can't. Not today in the world of spoilers, but I feel like you guys have definitely figured out how to hit the plot points and the beats from The Magicians that people are expecting to see or hoping to see, but in a new costume.
You know? I mean, think about Hidden Bodies, the second book, is that... she just excoriates Los Angeles.
Oh my God. It's, I mean, the
she
first.
She calls, like, it loving. I'm like, is it?
The first chapter of that book, I was like, oh my God, she is burning the ground around her. I love it.
And the thing is that, like, it's a writer's room full of people who live in LA and work in Hollywood. So, one thing I'm really looking forward to when we get back in the room, which will happen in a couple months, is just, like, letting people go crazy about, like, how, but tell us how you really feel. You know, how do you really feel about being in Starbucks next to, you know, in line behind Taylor Swift? Like, whatever.
It's so weird. I've experienced that being here.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, wait, you're Denise Richards, and those are four of your dogs.
Amazing.
Okay. All right. Here's your Venti Latte. Excellent. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you.
This is, congratulations. We'll probably talk to you later on for the Magicians.
Oh, awesome.
Yes.
I love that.
Can't wait to probably, this is probably going to be one of those really fun shows to watch and tweet along.
I think so.
Because the reactions to these behaviors are going to be jarring.
I'm so interested to see how people react.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey everyone, this is Damian Holbrook from TV Guide Magazine, and this is the TV Babble post-TCA wrap-up. I am sitting here with my colleagues Matt Rausch and Jim Halterman, and we are in the Beverly Hills, Beverly Hilton Hotel. This is day 175 of the Summer Television Critics Association Press Tour. We have sat in ballrooms for the last 2 weeks, watching panels and presentations from all the networks and the cable outlets and the streaming services and the apps that have been providing us with all of the TV content that we then get to watch and review and talk about and give back to you in TV Guide Magazine.
What's funny, we just came from Comic-Con where you and I just did a roundtable, and then we were exhausted. And I don't think that exhaustion has really left. It's probably shifted into something
just
else.
It's like a steady steady diet of exhaustion.
Exactly. Yeah.
And if there's not a panel, then I'm up in my room watching, because the TV doesn't stop. So, I mean, like, I've been still covering summer TV. There's a lot of premieres even at the end of August. They don't even stop on Labor Day anymore. So between watching regular TV and listening to the panels, we have, it's like TV boot camp, which is not a real complaint. It's just really intensely focused on the world of television and in this wonderful hotel of the Beverly Hilton. It almost feels like a TV cocoon.
It is. It's summer. It's summer camp for TV to critics. This is. There's a pool outside, I've heard. It's apparently been very sunny. I feel like we're now mole people living in hotels this long.
But we've had no s'mores. I haven't seen s'mores once.
No s'mores.
So it doesn't feel like that kind of
a lot.
You may have missed one of the barbecues by the pool or something.
Yeah, no, there's been a lot of kale and quinoa salads.
Yes.
So what have you guys seen this summer that you've liked or just vehemently hated?
Well, I'll go with a positive now. I mean, the problem is with the fall season, especially on the networks, is that they're not taking a lot of risk. So I'm not sure hatred as much as ennui or boredom is the key there with many of the shows. But I will tell you, one of the panels that really got me so excited about the fall season, it's a throwback. I know we live in a world of reboots, but I got to say that the presentation of the Murphy Brown cast coming back, and they had just finished their first taping of the show like 2 days before they came out here for CBS's Day of the Press Tour, that Murphy Brown, I think, is a show still of the moment. It's the right time to bring it back at a time when news is under assault, and they're going to try to show in their own fake way what real news is all about as Murphy Brown and her team reconvene. And everybody sort of seemed like they had that chemistry all over again.
Oh, yeah.
A couple of new cast members, but also just the idea that they're going to be taking on issues like the Me Too movement, which of course is also kind of interesting given the swirl of controversy surrounding CBS and its leader, Leslie Moonves, who has many sexual harassment, another allegations against him. So in that regards, again, it's a show of the moment on a very interesting network. Mm. But it also, with all of the throwbacks, I think maybe next to Will and Grace, which, you know, when they came back on the air, didn't miss a beat. I think the Murphy Brown cast looks like they're really on their game, going to be on their game at a time when it's really important to have them back on TV.
Yeah, they have a lot of material definitely to work with.
Yeah. They surely do.
And I'm glad that much like Will and Grace, they have gone and gotten back a lot of their old writers.
Yeah.
So they know this universe. They're going to be presenting it with an eye for its history and the legacy of these characters rather than like getting a bunch of new writers to just try to like spruce up the story.
Yeah, and having Diane English back, and this was, of course, the show of her lifetime, and you got a sense she's been chomping the bit to address the issues of today, whether it's female equality, the whole Me Too movement, and all of that, plus also this idea that they are going to be representing news under assault. And you got to figure whatever Murphy Brown has to say about this fake news kind of thing, and what's happening in the world of 24/7 cable news, which does not exist in the days of Murphy Brown. There's just so many more aspects of how the media has changed and how media is under attack that I think it's going to be a really interesting show.
Okay. I'm excited. I'm also excited. Jane Fonda was at TCA Press Tour earlier in the
speaking about
the tour.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my God. So great. And the documentary is fantastic. If you're a fan of Jane Fonda, you don't want to miss this. It's on HBO. It's called Five Acts. It's kind of broken down into five four of her relationships with men, one being her father, and then several of her romances and husbands and whatnot. And the last chapter is herself, as she's kind of, I guess, figured out who she is or what she wants out of life. But she's a big part of it. It's not just other people talking about her. And she's very upfront about everything, about her shortcomings. She goes into the whole thing with Vietnam and all the controversy that still follows her to this day, and why she's still working today, because, you know, Grace and Frankie's a big hit. And Susan Lacy produced and directed the documentary. She also did the Spielberg documentary and countless others. She's amazing.
Yeah, she comes from PBS, where the American Master series was one of my all-time favorites. And since she left PBS to make documentaries for HBO, she's really raised her game, I think. The Spielberg documentary, which is Emmy-nominated, was fantastic. And this, I mean, the presentation at HBO was really fine. I haven't watched it yet because it didn't come on until the end of September, but it's going to be the first Monday of that premiere week, of the official premiere week. HBO is going to upstage everybody by putting the Jane Fonda documentary on. And I know I'll be watching that, or I will have already watched it, but I recommend you do too.
I agree.
It was phenomenal. And also, like, I think it might be interesting to people who aren't even super Jane Fonda fans, because it's also a really interesting look at history from her perspective and the perspective of a young actress. She addresses so much of what current, like, you know, modern day younger actresses are going through as far as like manipulation and how men have shaped their careers. Mm-hmm. And then through the Vietnam War and all that stuff, like there was stuff that was going on that I wasn't aware of. Yeah. And what she experienced was a very different experience than what I think a lot of people saw on the nightly news.
Yeah. And of course, there'll be people, young people that might go, who's Henry Fonda? They may not remember that her father was this huge actor. But do your homework, people.
Just watch on Golden Pond, people.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
Oh, it's so good.
So that documentary airs on September 24th on HBO.
Yes.
Damien, what did you see?
So I really liked the pilot for All American, which is the CW's football drama. Well, originally, the way it was presented was it was going to be this football drama. It was based on roughly based on the life of Spencer Basinger, this NFL player who grew up in South Central, and then he, you know, obviously became an NFL football star. But it's produced by Robbie Rogers, the openly gay soccer player who happens to also be married to executive producer Greg Berlanti, who has created all of the superhero shows in the world. So there was a lot there, but when I sat down and actually watched the pilot, I'm thinking it's going to be like Friday Night Lights and maybe like a closeted gay star, you know, actor, you know, character or whatever. And what it turned out to be, and I was so delighted, was it was basically the OC meets 90210 with like maybe a touch of Friday Night Lights, like just barely. Like there's football, but it's really about like the high school dynamics, the machinations of the coach played by Taye Diggs. The cast is really interesting, very diverse. And actually, it's really nice to watch a cast of young actors who aren't god-awful with a story that's really kind of relevant, but still has that soap opera-y thing going on, because you know I love my soap operas.
Same here.
I love my high school soap opera. So when you tell me, like, oh, it's set at the Beverly High, it's not like West Beverly High.
Right.
It's Beverly High. But it has all of that 90210 DNA. It has the OC DNA of, like, the outsider from the wrong side of the tracks being taken in by a wealthy family. And I was watching it. I'm like, I'm all in on this. I want to see how they handle these issues. I know, like, I fully expect, like, one episode will be steroids. One episode will be race relations. One episode will be me. Like, it's going to be all of that. Yeah. And I'm here for that. Because as much as I've gotten to the point where I am so tired of TV reflecting modern society, because modern society right now is a horror show, I want the soap opera in this. I want my high school drama again.
Yeah, and they made a really good pitch at their press tour session that that even unlike the OC, that this boy who is coming into this world is going to stay in both worlds. So you're going to still see him because he didn't move that far away. So the idea that his family is still in South Central, he still cares for them. There's a lot of issues there that he deals with. But he's also got a sense of humor about it. So when he like tweaks the guys about wearing gang colors when they come into his block, and it's like, no, I'm just joking and all that stuff. But there's going to reflect all of that. So it's not going to just be him living the high life.
Right.
It's going to have a lot more. I think it's got some teeth to it, which makes it, I think, a nice thing to have on the CW, which is going through a very transitional year. Going to lose two of my favorites with Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which gave a great final session.
Oh, yeah.
And Jane the Virgin. And so they're going to miss, they're going to lose that kind of more of the soapy kind of shows they have on the air. They still need to put something on that's pure delight. Mm-hmm. There isn't a lot of that on the CW right now, but I think that The All-American is going to sort of stand out from the pack.
Yeah.
And it'll be an interesting Wednesday paired with Riverdale, which is just super.
No, like the opposite. Opposite of that high school drama.
Yeah.
Right.
Super twisted meets super earnest, but also really entertaining.
Right.
And I think that the pilot of All-American was really entertaining.
Yeah.
Loved it. What else did you see at tour, Matt?
Well, you know, the tour. You can't talk about TV without talking about Netflix, honest to God. Netflix is just, you know, just the tonnage of it, right? I mean, they gave a whole day of the press tour, and it was really pretty interesting. But the show that stood out for me is a show called The Kominsky Method, which stars Michael Douglas in his first TV show in a long time, and Alan Arkin. This is from Chuck Lorre doing a single camera, much more of a melancholy. It's more of a dramedy than it is a comedy, but it's about a acting coach, a legendary acting coach, and that's Michael Douglas, and his relationship with his agent, played by Alan Arkin. They're dealing with the issues of aging and Hollywood, but also it's got humor, but it's got a lot of poignance to it. It's one of the very few shows I've seen anywhere through this press tour where I want to see more. I cannot wait to see the full season, which I'm sure they'll give me before it premieres. It doesn't premiere until November 16th, but I think it's going to be a significant show for Netflix. And again, another show of just how the range of Chuck Lorre, from Big Bang to Young Sheldon to Mom, and now he's got The Kominsky Method. I mean, he really is a hit maker, and this, I think, seems like a very personal show for him.
Yeah, it has a different tone and feel to it. Maybe it's because it's not in front of a studio audience. And
And again, it's like much like Grace and Frankie. Some people say it's like the male version of Grace and Frankie, but it's not that upbeat. But the idea here, though, I think, is that he's doing something that's kind of meaningful and personal and isn't just joke laden. But Nancy Travis also, who's coming back.
Oh my gosh, she's in everything.
Yeah, but she's playing his love, Michael Douglas' love interest, and she's so good in this.
Okay.
And so I think this is like this is her work, and then she goes to The Last Man Standing to make money. You know?
But also, she's so good on Mr. Mercedes.
That too.
Oh my gosh, yeah. She literally is in everything.
She is in everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go That's coming Travis. In August because everything, you know, TV never stops.
Right.
It doesn't. Oh, my God.
What about you, Jim?
I just yesterday, was it yesterday?
Just yesterday,
Showtime was here, and I was able to watch the first episode of Escape to Dannemora.
Did
I say two?
Usually people say Escape From.
Escape at
you
Dannemora.
I know.
I'm having them, like, breaking into the prison. But it's based on the 2015 Dannemora prison outbreak, or not outbreak, just the break. But it's Ben Stiller directed it, and the guys that write it are from Ray Donovan, Michael Tolkien, and Brett. Let me see if I can find it. Oh, anyway. Sorry if I butchered Brett's name. Brett Johnson. There we go. But it's really compelling, and it's Patricia Arquette is a woman that works in the prison, and then Benicio del Toro and Paul Dano play inmates who kind of strike up separate affairs with her, and then she helps them, and you don't really know, are they using her or is there something more involved, but they basically end up breaking out of prison, and it became a huge thing in 2015. So this is the 8-episode documentation of that, but it was so well done, and I got to talk to Ben Stiller and everybody yesterday. And I can't wait to see more. It's one of those times where a lot of times we watch an episode of something. It's like, okay, I'm good. I don't need to see any more.
Right.
But this one, I was like, when are you sending me more episodes? Because one was not enough.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks really, really strong.
It's really well done.
And again, that cast, I mean, Benicio del Toro and Patricia Arquette, who put on significant weight to play this role. And it is a very de-glamorized story. For sure it is. This is very working class in the sticks, basically this prison setting. It's pretty grim, but what I've seen of it so far, I think it's going to be a real contender in the limited series category going forward. And Showtime is experimenting in that realm again. They haven't done a lot of they used to do a lot of movies. They don't do many made fours anymore, but they're going back in the limited series as an event. And with this cast, including Paul Dano as well, I mean, really that cast, having Ben Stiller behind it, spending 7 months filming this thing.
Yeah.
I mean, so this is a real enterprise for these people. And it hasn't gotten a lot of buzz yet, but I think by November when it premieres, a lot of people are going to be talking about this escape, and they will be really engrossed in it. I'm looking forward to seeing more of it myself.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a real quality contender.
And hats off to Showtime, because they had Twin Peaks as a limited series, which had its varied reviews out there. But then Patrick Melrose was fantastic.
Yeah.
So they're definitely bringing us the best in TV in that regard.
Yeah.
And that airs November 18th on Showtime.
Oh, okay.
Bring us home, Damien. What else you got?
All right, so I'm going back to the network stuff because there was so much cable. I mean, cable took up a bulk of this press tour, but the I'm interested to see what the world thinks of Million Little Pieces, the ABC ensemble drama. Million Little Things? Yes, Million Little Pieces was the James Frey book.
That's right.
Little Things. You've seen a ton of commercials for it already because they've been advertising it endlessly. It's about a group of friends that are rocked by the suicide. I'm not spoiling anything as it happens in like the first 3 minutes of the episode. Suicide of the friend that the man that actually brought them all together as friends when they got stuck on an elevator together. They're all Boston Bruins fans, and it's James Rhode from Psych and Romany Malco from Weeds, who is hilarious but playing a great dramatic role here. David Gentile from Grimm.
Yeah, from Grimm.
MTV's World Rules. Never forget that. And Ron Livingston, who's awesome. And it's a bit of the... it's got the This Is Us concept of someone is dead but keeps showing up in flashbacks, but it's Ron Livingston and we love him, so more of him always. Mm-hmm. And it's actually, you know, there are moments that are a bit mawkish and heavy-handed. I'd love to hear what Matt thinks, but there's also an interesting thing here to say about male friendships and those walls that we build up around ourselves as we get older and we get too familiar with each other and complacent in how we interact with one another. So I'm hoping that they kind of stay on that track. There's some soapy elements as well. Everyone has secrets, as we all do in real life, but these guys have TV secrets.
Yeah.
But I was really, really touched by the effort they put into exposing how men in particular do just take too much for granted in their friendships.
Yeah, well, I was waiting for this next wave of shows influenced by This Is Us. It didn't happen last season because it was still pretty fresh. But this season, you see more shows influenced by that emotional manipulation. You've got a feel-good show on CBS called God Friended Me, where it's sort of social media meets Touched by an Angel meets Highway to Heaven, I don't know. But you've also got like Manifest on NBC, which is like a Lost kind of mystery, but it has more of an emotional tug, sort of again like a This Is Us kind of a feel about these people who got stuck on a plane, possibly for a reason, getting lost in limbo for like 7 years. But with Million Little Things, again, it's got a very emotional hook. It's very manipulative, but it's effective and a great cast.
Great cast.
And the only thing I have about it is like the hook of This Is Us was so wonderfully emotional about this father that they will never forget and get over. The hook of Suicide just seems a bit trickier in terms of, is that going to be a lure or a turnoff?
Right.
It's going to be one or the other, and we'll know immediately whether the show hooks people.
Yeah.
It deserves to in some regards. It's one of those where you really need episode 2 and 3 to see if it can sustain. But I love the fact that ABC is trying with this kind of drama. It's not just another procedural.
Right.
It's not just, you know, there's so much, and it's not another reboot in that regards. And so,
which is so refreshing.
Which is. So in that regards, props to anybody who's trying something on broadcast network TV, because often it looks like they've just given up. And with something like A Million Little Things, that looks like a show that might have a million or more viewers.
Yeah, I hope so, because there's really one really effective scene that really just knocked me out. And it was from Romany Malco, which I did not expect from him. But then there's also a very interesting discussion at the character's wake or reception afterwards that kind of touches on, there's this beautiful analogy about depression. And I feel like that conversation needs to continue to happen. And if network TV can get to that, rather than like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend has done a really good job with it. But with men, I think it is that thing where it's always been a little bit taboo.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a wrap from TCA. We'll be back in 2 weeks on TV Babble with more topics on all the TV.
Oh my God,
there's so
fall
much.
Preview.
Fall preview.
Yes.
We're gearing up for it.
Never going to stop.
I know.
Keep watching.
We'll do our best to keep you guys in tune with what to be watching.
See you guys later.
Bye. Thanks.
Bye.